Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Hourglass of Isabella. I'm here with the wonderful Michael Corvus.
Hello, everyone.
And what are we going to discuss today?
Murder Most Foul.
Murder Most Foul. Murder, She Wrote. We're actually going to be talking about H.H. Holmes, who is one of the more notorious and certainly the first famous serial killer of American history.
Yeah, so in our young history, he stands out as the first serial killer, I believe.
Right, and what fascinates me about H.H. Holmes, which I actually do have a previous two-part podcast about serial killers, and he is very briefly discussed within that podcast, is just the degree of the myth and legend that surrounds this particular man. There is so much salacious, sometimes false information out there, to the point where, honestly, folks, like doing this podcast, I had to do a lot of research to actually get to the truth of what this man kind of did or did not do.
Right, well, he's a bastard either way.
He's evil. Make
yeah, absolutely, yeah.
But it's just, there's so much. I'll give you some examples as we jump into this. So this guy, H.H. Holmes, right, he's born in the 1860s, specifically 1861. And he's from New Hampshire, in a little town that's called that was a Freudian slip. A little town that's called Gilmanton, New Hampshire.
Never heard of it.
And he's actually quite a sensitive child, right, when he's born, and quite fearful of things. And we know for a fact he was bullied, specifically by his schoolmates. So much so was he bullied that they would take him and he put him in front of a skeleton and forced him to look at it and place his hands upon it. And he was, while very apparently fearful at first, later he quoted that it rid him of his fear of death. And thus began the young Holmes, who at this time was born actually as Herman Webster Mudgett.
Mudgett.
What a name.
Mudgett, I believe.
That was his birth name. So little Herman, you know, at this point, has lost his fear. And this kid goes on to become one of the most, probably most notorious serial killers of all time, and certainly one of the most interesting, most well known for his murder castle, which was in Chicago. During the World's Fair. For those of you that don't know, the World's Fair was a very popular fair that took place often in the 1800s, that showed off all of the best and brightest inventions, the finest architecture, and it was an honor to host and hold the World's Fair. And specifically, people like Tesla, you know, would come down, show off electricity and all these new grand inventions, because we were very much in an era at that point in the late 1800s. And this is, you know, the 1880s, 1890s at this point, where we really wanted to show off all we'd learned and all the wonders of the world. And they had exhibits and food exhibits and ship exhibits and all sorts of really fascinating things. Holmes very much took advantage of this and built a hotel, quote hotel, which is now known as the Murder Castle.
The Murder Castle. He himself called it the Castle.
That's right. But I think we in post named it. Yes, it
the
became
Murder Castle.
The Murder Castle. And it was called the Murder Castle because it had extensive labyrinth-like qualities. There was over 50, in the architectural plans, which we have, there was over like 50 different doors that just led to brick walls. And it was labyrinthine, kind of go down one. Do you know about the Winchester Mystery House?
No, enlighten me, please.
It's a very famous house. So the Winchester, they did guns, right? They did rifles. You've heard of the Winchester?
Yes.
Right. The widow of the fortune, she believed she was being haunted by all the people who had been killed by Winchester guns. And so she was instructed by the spirits through a medium in the 1800s as well to build a place called the Winchester Mystery House that you can visit today. It still exists, and it was a labyrinthine manor, and it was filled with all these passages and doors that led to nowhere and staircases that finished in brick walls. And it's interesting because the Murder Castle is very similar in its kind of layout concept of having these paths that lead to nowhere. The difference was, you know, in the Winchester Mystery House, they were to evade spirits who were angry and looking to seek revenge on the family. But with the Murder Castle, Holmes was looking to build these chutes and things to place bodies down them. And he was looking to have rooms without windows specifically, of which there were many in the building, so that he could gas his victims. And he did do this multiple times. He had hidden...
With literal gas, not just giving them a good laugh.
Yeah, right, not laughing gas, but that would also... He literally would gas his victims, and then, like, you know, you'll see these comic books where the bed will open up and a person goes down the chute. He would literally have these things leading into incinerators. No jokes. He built body-sized human chutes, and he would be able to dispose of his victims in the basement. He often would sell the skeletons for medical research, because he himself, when he was still little Herman, as a child, he went about the task of going to medical school, which he did successfully. In fact, he even went to the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, and he took classes. And you know what he did at the cadaver classes?
What did he do?
He would take the bodies, mutilate them further, and then try to claim life insurance on them.
Hmm.
From the school.
So he was an entrepreneur.
He was a strange sort of entrepreneur. At a young age, he also mutilated animals early on, which is actually, do you know, that's a point factor for any sociopath or psychopath. That's one of the traits.
Yes, that's one of the key torture markers to see if you actually hurt animals. Something that is smaller than you, something that
is innocent
and really can't use their own words to be able to defend themselves in any way, shape, or form. Basically, if you feel like you can get away with something and you do something untoward towards something that you can get away with, that's kind of a marker for sociopathic
behavior.
Yeah, exactly.
Sociopathic behavior. And it's so interesting to me because, you know, so he was dissecting these animals at a young age, and then he goes off to school, and at this point he's not murdering people at this juncture, but he is still using bodies for nefarious purposes. So he's obviously getting ideas, he's formulating ideas in his head now, you know, as he's a teenager going into his early 20s. He's starting to realize, I can get away with this stuff, and I can do these insurance claims, and it's actually working. And back then it was harder to do background checks, and what a lot of people don't realize is that in the medical industry in the 1800s, a lot of people would have to steal bodies for medical research. And of course it's unethical, it's 100% unethical, but back then it was viewed as so unethical, they still had to be able to teach students, and so often professors would buy skeletons and bodies and things and not really ask too many questions about where those things came from, in order just to get the science going for, you know, the kids who were studying the profession to be future doctors, to actually save people. And it was completely unethical. So
yeah, the medical industry is not what it is today, where everything is, like, you know, tracked and categorized.
You can donate your body to medical research now, and that's all fine and good. Back then it was very almost a religious taboo, and so grave robbers, you've heard the term for grave robber, was a very big
kind of the wild west of the medical.
Yeah, and it happened in England too. In Edinburgh we had the Edinburgh Vaults, and the grave robbers go down and sometimes kill people and pretend they were getting it from a grave in order to, because nobody will miss the homeless person on the corner, you know. And it was nefarious, and that was a very real thing.
It's quite nefarious, but you have to look at kind of the trade-off. Like, people were trying their best to learn about this, that, and the other. The biomechanical sense of
it only becomes truly nefarious. I mean, it's all nefarious, don't get me wrong. Yeah. It only becomes truly nefarious when you start killing people and pretending they have died through natural causes in order to sell them off for profit to a
Right. That's like kidney harvesting and everything
right.
else.
Right. It's like organ donation, but not
in modern age.
Exactly. Very similar. And so at this point, we're now going forwards to 1878. And at this point, Holmes marries. He marries a girl called Clara Lothering. And in my opinion, and it's going to sound terrible, I think of all the women in this sad, sorry story, I think she gets off the easiest because he never actually murders her. In fact, they have a child together, you know, and she quoted that they were quite happy together and everything else, and he appeared the perfect husband, you know, because, of course, social paths are very good. They hide behind masks, and they can mimic certain behaviors. So she feels she's very much in love with him. He's the perfect gentleman. Holmes is actually married multiple times in his life, and he abandons Clara and child and leaves them behind. And in
she got off lucky.
She was not murdered. In 1886, he gets with Marta Belknap, and he marries her as well. He actually tried to get a file divorce with this particular woman, and didn't work. And he went on then to marry Minnie Williams. And this is now 1893, who unfortunately she did get the murder. The murdering occurred with her. She and her sister, Annie, they basically what happened was she was kind of like a fortune. It was like a railroad type fortune situation. And Holmes always prayed. A lot of people think he was just getting this murder factory and bringing people who were coming to the World's Fair in Chicago to see the wonders. He would bring them in and gas them in a hotel and then dissect them and sell them off to medical industry. It wasn't actually that black and white. It was actually more in reality. He would go after women specifically who were not just desperate, but sometimes looking and lonely and looking for love. And he quite fancied often, you know, wealthy women who were from the South, and he knew he could take advantage of that, and he would take up life insurance claims or sometimes convince them. In the case of Minnie, he convinced her to put over all of her property to another man, but in fact, we now know it was Holmes. He just changed his name to make it look like it was someone else, so she transferred that over. And then, you know, mysteriously, they both disappeared because Minnie had written to her sister and said, oh, he's doing this thing and he's transferring his property. And she got the alarm bell. She was smart. She said, oh, something's not right here. So she came over to Chicago. In fact, Holmes invited her to Chicago and said, hey, well, why don't you come over here and see how well I'm treating your sister?
Okay, so from his progression from being bullied and thrown into a closet to touch skeletons.
Yes.
Which, hey, good point of fact. Be careful about who you bully. They might be.
They might end up being next Dexter.
Well, at least Dexter had morals.
Morals, right? Or you? We watched the show the other day.
I don't like that show.
I didn't like it either. Yeah.
Yeah, he's yeah, but be careful who you bully. But so he gets from New Hampshire, he goes to Chicago. He's obviously done a couple of things.
Well, he was before he was even in Chicago. The whole thing when he was with Clara, he wasn't even in Chicago. He even spent some time in Denver. He stole some horses, did all sorts. So he's just guy in a classic thing again with psychopaths. And this is definitely a psychopath versus a sociopath.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the whole dark triad.
It's the whole dark triad and a narcissist as well and all the things. You know, he just commits any crime of any level to get anything he wants for money. And that's all he cares about. But he also, as a predator and someone who is a psychopath, enjoys sadistically seducing women in that hunter predator-prey dynamic and then luring them to their deaths. That comes later, because in the beginning he's just leaving women and then divorcing them, and then he realizes he can have it all and he gets a taste for it.
Wait a minute, I don't have to divorce them. I can sell their body parts for profit and fun.
Exactly, 100% that. And so, in fact, at the end, when he was hung in the end, he did end up, he got a hanging, so to speak, and it's quite, at the end of his death, it took luckily, I think it is lucky, honestly, because the guy deserved it. It didn't break his neck, and it took him 15 minutes to suffocate to death slowly while being hung. And then 5 minutes later, they pronounced him death at the prison. They pronounced him dead. And I think he kind of deserved that, honestly, because he was such a nasty man, you know.
So he's popped up in recent, like, well, pop culture. There's a book, there's a movie, there's even a game,
Not out. This is a great thing to talk about, because there was going to be a movie. And it was actually going to star Leonardo DiCaprio specifically, which I thought was fascinating unto itself. But what they ended up doing, this for last year is 2009, and what they ended up doing was they've changed it now to a Hulu series instead of a movie. And it's actually based on a book, and the book is called The Devil in the White City. So instead of being a movie, it will now be a TV miniseries on Hulu. But this was 2019. It's definitely going to have Leonardo DiCaprio, which is great. I think he's a great actor.
Yeah.
But it's now, what, 2021? We've had pandemic and everything. Are we in 2021?
Yes, we are.
Yes, great.
I had to consult my phone for that.
Right, and so that is still potentially coming out. But I think what you were trying to say there is there have been books and potential movies, and I'm surprised it hasn't been a big blockbuster yet. It seems like an obvious one.
I know. You can't go onto any of your media delivery devices, Hulu, Amazon, Netflix, what have you, without finding 10 or 15 different versions of Jack the Ripper.
Yes, because Jack the Ripper is so famous. Do you know there are a lot of people that believe H.H. Holmes was Jack the Ripper?
Really?
Oh, that's a fact. A lot of people believe, because of the similarities of the medical aspect, Jack the Ripper, during the Whitechapel murders in the 1880s to 1890s,
mm-hmm.
You know, he went on a killing spree of prostitutes, and he would dissect them and take, like, their womb out. He just had a little bit too much knowledge, either someone who was a butcher or someone in the medical field. So there are actually people, including, as you pointed out earlier when we were doing research on this, you were like, is Meghan Markle related to H.H. Holmes? And the answer is yes. Our current royalty princess may very well be related to H.H. Holmes.
Well, yeah, I mean, and you know, that's not anything. I mean, you know, sins of the father don't transfer.
They don't translate whatsoever.
Yeah,
it's just exactly. Interesting.
I have some interesting characters in my lineage as well, too, but you know, I don't speak of them.
Right.
But do you think that people are likening or coming up with these theories, or that H.H. Holmes is the Jack the Ripper simply because of the similarity?
It's impossible, though. It's the actual historical fact.
Right, but
like
you,
in the
you
1890s,
some...
he was getting girls pregnant in Chicago, and then he went off to Texas, and we literally know the time frames. He couldn't have physically been in both places at once.
Well,
but it's interesting and scandalous, isn't
well,
it?
Well, it's interesting and scandalous, and I think that it probably speaks volumes to, you know, and this could devolve into an entire different conversation, but you have a horrendous thing that happens, right? And then you see another horrendous thing, and it's much easier for the human psyche to say, oh, well, it must be the same person, like the Hillside
yes.
Strangler must also be the BTK
this
killer
person,
or what have you,
have so
because it was so much better to believe that all these nefarious evil things are attributed to one person as opposed to four people, right? So I think that's probably
yes.
where a lot of the correlation between Jack the Ripper and H.H. Holmes comes from.
And also I think America's first proper serial killer, and there was a lot of salaciousness in the newspapers, and you guys wanted to be like, look, not only do we have a serial killer, he's just as scary as Jack the Ripper, if not more. So what became of it is interesting, is it got so much into a rumor mill that people started saying H.H. Holmes had murdered up to 200 people.
Is that true?
It's not true, but people say that and state that. H.H. Holmes himself only admitted to 27 murders.
Only? A mere 27.
But what's interesting about those 27 murders is many of the people that he listed that he had killed were actually proven to be alive and well. So he himself was exaggerating. We actually think it's about 9 to 10. And in reality, most of those are women, again, that he's going after because he wants to do the insurance claims and he wants to toy with their hearts. And he himself claimed he had there was one girl, Emmeline. And in fact, some historians actually believe he loved her as much as a sociopath can love someone because he actually stated, he said, I don't know what love is, but if I ever loved a woman, it would have been her. And he took her to the opera many times in advance. He told her, in fact, that he was part of British aristocracy and his father was a lord. He was going to take her back to England to introduce her to her family and, in fact, proposed to her, even though he was obviously married several times at this point. She was actually just like his secretary. She'd work at the desk in the hotel. And he very much was, like, attached to her bones, which is very creepy unto itself, because as we know, serial killers often
have trophies.
They'll keep, you know, your skull in a fridge or your finger in a bag, and it doesn't make sense to you or I, but to them there's some kind of attachment and possession going on there, which he definitely had with a lot of these women. I think he wanted to possess a lot of them. And I was going through reading, because obviously he didn't kill 200 people. I don't even know if he got away with
that. I mean, even at...
Not to say his numbers weren't impressive and terrible.
Yeah, but even in the day within which he lived, 200 would have not gone without notice, even without forensic science or particularly keen people to pay attention.
He was
to.
Also offered in jail a large sum of money by the newspapers, which today would have been like $200,000, to reveal his crimes. And so I think because he was so money grabbing, even though he knew he was on death row.
What was the time frames of his deeds?
So he did most of his dark deeds 1880s to 1890s.
Okay.
I mean, though, to be fair, considering he was born in 1861, we could argue he was doing bad things to animals and cadavers and innocent people and swindling people very early on. So really the whole time frame, but the actual killings was, you know, that whole World's Fair thing. In fact, you know, he had a plan to build another hotel after he fled the other one. It didn't come to fruition. Yeah. He literally was, and the hotel is, if you look at pictures, it's large and impressive. It doesn't exist today, folks. It actually was demolished. I think it would have been fascinating for a historical thing. What I think is really interesting about the Emmeline thing is they found, and it's kind of sad, a detective quoted that he found a bloody footprint seared into the floor, and it turned out how he did away with Emmeline was his girlfriend, is he locked her into a human-sized vault and slowly, sadistically released, withdrew the oxygen from the room so that she would very slowly go. And in fact, he had put acid all over the floor so that the oxygen would withdraw faster in the process, but she ended up burning her footprint into the floor of the blood while she was trying to fight her way out, evidently, of the vault. And likewise, Minnie's sister, Annie, he hired her for a bit and was like, oh, I need you to do this task for me. Go fetch some papers, and put her into a vault and then locked her in and while she was looking for papers and gassed her alive, you know. And then he had a person who was kind of like his comrade. Piazza, I believe his name was. He was like his right-hand man, helper, knew. He would even hide body parts and knew what was going on.
He's
and
complicit,
he was
though.
Married to a woman called Carrie. They had several children, multiple children, but she believed she was part of this insurance fraud where they were going to fake her husband's death, and they were all in on it. But Ben Holmes decided it would actually be easier to kill his right-hand man, so he got him with chloroform and then set him alive with fire and then gave the body away. The wife didn't know. He took the kids on, you know, vacation, three of the children, Alice, Nellie, and Little Howard, who was a toddler, little child. They were all little kids. And very unfortunately, he took them off with him, absconded away to Cincinnati, and actually he designed this large suitcase which actually it was like a gas chamber, but it was large enough to fit both Nellie and Alice inside it.
So any way you slice it, he's a bastard.
He's a real bastard. And then he took Howard and purchased drugged and killed the littlest child, and we only know that because we found his bones, because he removed his teeth from his little kid and put the body inside the brickwork of this little kind of Airbnb type deal, which was terrible. And likewise with the children, one of the children, I don't know if it was Alice or Nellie, one of them had a club foot, and the foot was removed from a child, and they couldn't understand why, and then they realized it's because Holmes feared identification, because it's a club that is very unique and it's easy to identify a body with. So he took that off and disposed of it in the process. So he killed these innocent little children, killed multiple women. So he really was, you know, the devil. He even quoted...
I believe he was executed on May 7th.
Yeah.
Is that right? 1896.
Do you have the quote? It's very interesting. He said, yes. I am the devil.
He says, I was born with the devil inside me. I could not help the fact that I was a murderer. No more than a poet can help the inspiration to sing. Something along those lines.
That's a true quote. And it's a perfect time because we're actually reaching our 30-minute climax here at the end of this. But I think that quote is a perfect thing, honestly, to kind of wrap this up with, because those are the words of a true sociopath or psychopath, is that I couldn't help my killing more than the poet can help the words he writes upon the page, right, or whatever it was. And I think in his mind, he very much was doing the devil's work, and that was the right thing to do, and did not care about anyone or anything, regardless of your gender, age, orientation. Yes, he favored beautiful, helpless young women, no doubt, as many serial killers do, to be fair, depending on their sexual orientation. There's definitely a component of that. But I do think it's fascinating how blown out of proportion the 200 killings to 9 to 10 people has become throughout history, because I think we want to believe, we want to hear the horror stories, right? We want to hear what's most salacious and interesting, and 200 grabs the attention.
200 sounds a lot better than 9.
Yeah, that's
9 you could do over a weekend, really. I mean, you know.
That's the whole point, though, is that I think the newspapers picked up on that and used that, you know, to their advantage, ultimately.
Well, that's the beginning parts of yellow journalism. That'll be another podcast topic.
Yeah, yellow journalism, which is actually brought up multiple times in all of the articles you will read. Mm-hmm. So I urge you, if you ever research H.H. Holmes, I am hoping they do the series and they do it correct to life. Because at the end of the day, this was a sad little man who used his medical knowledge to con and hurt people for game, because every time he killed these women, which I didn't include, he would sell the skeletons to the medical institutions. And in fact, sometimes they would willingly go under the knife because he'd say, hey, I'll marry you if you get an abortion, and then we'll be married by Christmas Day. He knows what he told one of his wives.
And he's not a particularly handsome fellow.
I don't know if you've seen his pictures. Yeah. He's actually, I think for the day, the moustache is very popular. I think he actually for the day would have been seen as very charismatic, very charming and handsome for the age he was in.
The charisma more than the aesthetics, I would say.
Right, which every sociopath possesses, and that's how they're able to manipulate people ultimately. Mm. So they use that charisma to their advantage.
So in closing, he's a bastard.
He's right. Did you learn anything today?
I did. I learned a great deal. I learned that he's a bastard. We don't like him.
He died well in the sense that he struggled and suffered greatly at the end, so it's good.
I've already known this, but be careful who you bully.
And also, I will say for women, be careful who you're friends with as well.
Be careful who you're friends with. Be careful who you trust.
And the final point we were going to bring up that was important about this is there's a game that I play called Time Princess. And they actually recently released a story about H.H. Holmes. And a lot of people are up in arms about it. They're very upset about it, because they said, you know, this is inappropriate content. And even very clearly said, this is a game for adults, you know, and has mature and sexual content. You should be aware of this before you play it. They're a small game company. And I played the storyline, and I will say, I think it was historically accurately researched. And while a lot of people are upset about it, I think it's actually important to teach women, or really anyone, to be fair, that who you're meeting might not be what they seem. And sometimes there's great darkness behind that. And I think that is the most valuable lesson. If you get a feeling in your gut that something is wrong or something's not right, follow that, because it's probably correct.
Yeah, not all that glitters is gold.
So without further ado, thank you for taking the time to listen to our podcast. Good night and sleep tight.